Hint. Well, are you going to hug her or mope on my shoulder? Dave whispered into her ear, giving her a slight push. It was what Dia needed. New tears flooded down her face as she wrapped her arms around Fire. Maul and Dave stood to the side, watching as Fire and Dia cried and shook together. It took some time before they were able to separate from each other. For hours they talked. They laughed and they cried, and Dia got to know the woman her father had adventured and learned beside, before falling in love with each other and making her. She learned of Fire's fears, why she had kept away from both Maul and Dia to protect them, how Malsor and Induka wanted to meet the daughter of Fire, practically their aunt, and had taken on the role of guardians and then friends. By the time they left, Dia was mentally and emotionally drained. She was the daughter of the Lady of Fire. Her half-sister was Dinur, the mother of dragons, and her mother created the Mages College and Guild. Susie was shocked, but she'd learned so many crazy things since coming to Amarillia. It was just another Tuesday. Malsor and Induka seemed relieved with not having to keep the secret anymore. Anna seemed to have figured it out, either on her own or by her father telling her. Fire was nothing like what Dia had expected, and so much of what she was hoping for. Dia fell asleep holding Dave, content in the knowledge she'd gained. Maul felt a breeze from his open window. "You going to stand there or join me?" he asked sleepily. "How did you know it was me?" Fire closed the door to his balcony. "Know you anywhere, even with a different face." Maul yawned and pulled the sheets back on his bed. Fire got in as he pulled the sheets back over her and wrapped his arms over her. Maul nearly fell back asleep before Fire turned over, her eyes looking into his. "Maul, you awake?"
"No."
"So, what now, though? She knows about me, and we talked. But what do we do now?" Maul opened one eye, getting comfortable in the bed. "She is a grown woman. She has her own things she needs to do. Right now, all we can do is wish her luck. Think of her as just another college student at this point. Get to know her. Her desires, wants, aspirations. Talk about the future and your lives together. I raised her by treating her as I would like to be treated. Talk, don't dictate. You'd be surprised how well it goes. But I'm her mom. Shouldn't I don't know, do something? Ignil, you are her mother, but she's her own woman. She's a couple of centuries old. She's seen some stuff in her time, and she deserves your respect. Get to know her like you did last night. Don't try to push yourself on her," Maul said. "I thought that it would be such a big deal when it happened," Fire said into Maul's chest. "She grew up, Ignil. She grew up much faster than I ever thought, that was for sure," Maul snorted, shaking his head. "What? I remember my mother and father telling me that children always grow up faster than you would ever think. One day you're watching them crawl, the next they're walking out your door and out into their own adventures." Fire squeezed Maul's arm, reassuring him. "The pain has lessened over the years, but I still haven't forgiven the Pantheon. Sure, some of you do good, but we shouldn't have them lording over us all the time. Down here on Imorilia, at least some rules are put into place against certain conduct. Where the Pantheon is concerned, they think they're above it all, and try to destroy our rules just because they want more power." Maul sighed. "Your siblings are something else," Fire snorted. "Yeah, I'll be happy as can be when they meet the people who they have lorded over face to face. I feel that it's coming." Maul's words sounded like a hopeful promise. "I do too," Fire said, scared for what it would bring. The Pantheon was not going to fall easily. Chapter 27 Progress. Dave touched the mirror, accessing its conferencing ability. He appeared in a simple room with two chairs facing a fireplace. Cole, the old dwarf, waved him over. Even without eyes, he had the uncanny ability to know where everyone and everything was. Usually even better than people with eyes, because of a spell he used constantly. Similar to Dave's touch of the land, that allowed him to sense everything around him and look through it.
"We've placed the order. We should have it soon," Cole said.
"Good, good," Dave smiled.
"Are you sure about this? The amount of resources? It could give you an easy life until the end of your days."
"It could, but it wouldn't be as interesting as what might happen with connecting Cliff Hill to the rest of Emerilia. I hope that we're ready for expansion." Dave rubbed his hands together.
"Always the... what was it? Industrialist, was it?"
"You listened to Susie too much while she was there," Dave groaned. Cole cracked one of his rare smiles and clapped Dave on the shoulder. The man was the grandfather and mentor that Dave had never had.
"We've got all the smithies working on your order. They're of good steel and sturdy design, but they're by no means the best weapons we've made. We're coming out at above 20% production," Cole said.
"Awesome. I'll tell Susie that. She's the one setting up this deal."
"Who are we arming with all of this? Those weapons and armor are much heavier than what a human might use. Not as graceful as what an elf uses, and too big for a dwarf."
Cole might not have eyes, but his interest was clear. "A month and a half and you'll see. Make sure that you've got the forge's emblem hammered into the middle of the shield and on every blade," Dave said.
"Almost makes me think that you're preparing for a war, boy."
Cole dropped his voice lower. "One is coming, but this... just think of it as a nice big surprise." He paused, a wide and cruel smile spread across his face. "One that the Dark Lord is going to lose his shit over."
"Well, I can get behind that."
Cole clapped Dave on the back.
"Now I guess I'd better get this meeting started."
Dave followed Cole out of the eaves around the main table. The dwarves pored over different plans that they had, arguing, looking thoughtful, making useful suggestions. Or they might be just sitting down and talking with their friends. As Cole walked in, they all finished up their different conversations and drifted toward the large table. Cole took his time so that everyone was seated.
"All right, calling this meeting of hammer-wielding vagabonds to session."
Cole hit a hammer on the table. A few smiles and proud looks were on the dwarves' faces around the tables.
"Okay, resources have been doled out. We also have a report from the forces that have been moved to Mizia Mountains to train. The Lord of the Mountain, Fend, has thanked us for sending him the reinforcements he needs, so that he could switch his forces off and on the wall. We've been getting good reports from the training commanders in the area. Seems that there are some beasts in the area that are rather difficult to kill. The training has been good for our people. Also, a number of dungeons have been found in the area and are being farmed by different dwarven warbands and war clans for training. The commanders believe that we will be able to extend deeper into the mountains with this new training. We will check on their progress in 2 weeks. At which time, Rola will be running this seat."
Cole actually sounded excited for once. "He really hates leading this all," Dave thought with a snort.
"We also have news from Dave regarding the new materials that he has been processing for us."
Cole waved to Dave. "Thanks, Cole. Okay, so production is slowing down. The refineries I had access to are moving to other resources that the owners need. It will mean that there will be less of the materials to go around. That said, there still will be shipments. Also, the Stone Raiders' first priority is to get refineries going for the sole purpose of refining out multiple materials. I was wondering if there was anyone who had designed a refinery to separate out any and all different metals and then smelt them down into ingots." Dave looked around. He had an idea, but it would be hard to do. No one seemed to have a suggestion.
"I know that we're working on mass refineries that would be able to work with one metal, refining it out and turning it out into ingots, and then the crude from that, getting run into the other refineries to get out any other metals within it, Edmer said.
Do you know what the power requirements and material requirements would be like to make one of those refinery plants? Dave asked.
I'm not sure, but I could find out, Edmer said.
If you could, that would be awesome. In the meantime, I have another solution based off what I did back on Earth. I've patented it, but if anyone needs a refiner to just throw all their raw ores into and have it separated out by category, let me know. I'll pass you a plan. It can be scaled up or down as needed.
Dave took his seat. Any other announcements?
Cole looked around the table.
Gonda put up her hand.
Cole waved for her to talk.
We have been experimenting with the new materials. Specifically, after a talk and the information from Jeeves, we've been able to start capturing large mana charges through panels that have taken a while to perfect. We've also been working with the material graphene extensively. We have found that a layer of graphene, while it cannot hold runes by itself, if combined into most materials, it will allow for a new magical circuit or two to be added to the metal,
Gonda said with some well-deserved pride. The dwarves clapped at their fellow Master Smith's achievement. Gonda took her seat. The dwarves to either side congratulated her, as Cole waited for the clapping to die down.
Anything else?
Cole looked around. No one said anything. Dave raised his hand again.
Dave? Cole said, looking curious.
It might be an idea for Aldemeyer to be on higher alert over the next 2 months. I trust you all, but this information was given to me with the condition it was not to be shared.
Dave looked around the table. The happy expressions from earlier turned into frowns and beard tugging as they looked to Dave.
Hopefully, in less than 3 months, I will be able to tell you all.
We will take it under advisement, Cole said. Do you have any information on where this threat might come from?
Possibly the Northwest.
Understood. This information will not leave the Council. I will inform clan commanders myself. Fren, make sure that the Aldemeyer war clans are ready for whatever might happen.
Cole looked to the Master Smith who called Aldemeyer Mountain home.
It will be done.
Fren was not one for many words, but when he did speak, it was not wasted breath.
Good. Meeting adjourned.
Cole hit his hammer down on the table.
Wait, what?
Alcal asked Dwayne as he finished speaking.
Josh wants to put a teleport pad in the middle of what you want to be your city. He will write up an agreement for you, like other businesses that have these teleport pads do. Give you part of the profits. A tax on it, as well as certain rights to expedite stuff that you want to move. He is also willing to write up an agreement for a payment plan, at just plus 5% cost if you would like to purchase it from the Stone Raiders, Dwayne said.
Alcal laughed at what Dwayne was saying and Josh was proposing. A teleport pad was one of the greatest resources that a kingdom, let alone a town, had.
While it is operating, what will the tax be?
Alcal asked.
5% on the total value of the goods, Dwayne said.
That's robbery,
the trader leader for the Devil's Crater said.
We can do 2% tops.
5% and it stands. It would take you 3 weeks through forest to get to the next city. Who may want to trade with you or want to kill you? With the new teleport pad, we will also have traders who have recently joined our guild setting up a branch, if you allow it. If they are allowed, they will buy goods for what the median price is on the market. No tax or anything on those transactions unless you place one. Also, the terminal is available for other transactions, Dwayne said.
Rather smart having him as the one doing this deal, Alcal thought, placating the trader leader with a wave of his hand. Dwayne is one of the smartest and hardest commanders I know when fighting. When it comes to guild business, he's as strong as that shield he uses.
Okay, we are interested in it.
That said, we will be losing money with this new tax, and you know that we don't want to reveal who we are or where we come from until after we defeat the Demon Horde.
With having a trading branch here, we can give you better prices. We were already adding a tax, and then the cost of transporting materials. As for the war, Dave has an offer that he is willing to field. Susie has made the condition be on the teleport pad. Dwayne's stoic features twisted into a grin. She said if you took this deal, she wouldn't kick your ass. Silence filled the room till Al-Kaul laughed out loud.
Very well. Please send over the contract and I will have a look over it. I believe that if it is everything that you have said, then we can come to an agreement.
Dwayne opened his interface and Al-Kaul saw a message appear in his inbox. The deal that Susie has is to arm the Devil's Crater army and train your blacksmiths properly. Dave owns a smithy back in Cliff Hill. He's increased his production to make weapons and shields for your forces. Swords, pikes, all of it. He is ready to produce them at cost. She is also opening recruiting for the smithies up to your people so that they can improve their skills. They would learn through working and making better items. Also, earning them room and board as well as a smith's wage for anything they make above those two costs, Dwayne said, sounding as if he was having to remember it all.
That is a generous offer.
Al-Kaul looked to the crafter's leader.
I think this is more in your realm.
Yes, sir, the crafter said with a grim look on his face. What kind of learning will these blacksmiths receive?
Well, Dave is a dwarven master smith, second tier. His master is the one who runs the forge. So it will be the best in the world other than having them stuffed in a dwarven mountain, Dwayne said. Al-Kaul hid a smile at the crafter leader's face, his look of shock apparent.
I think that our blacksmiths would be eager to learn, but the issue comes down to payment, Al-Kaul said.
We are willing to extend the payment plan for 4 months after the demon horde is defeated. We do not think that we will be able to arm all of your forces. Susie thinks that will take 6 months, with the DCA rotating through Cliff Hill to get sized, and then the armor made. Well, unless our other friends are capable of doing it. Dwayne tapped his chin in thought, using the abbreviated version of Devil's Crater Army, much like how the people of Emerilia were called POEs. Al-Kaul wondered who these mysterious friends were that the Stone Raiders had been helping for so long. Dwayne and Kim had assured him that he would meet some of them soon enough.
I think that will be something for the leader of the traders here to talk about with Susie and Dave.
Al-Kaul looked to the leader. The Beastkin nodded, her expression guarded. Al-Kaul was impressed with her skills and the way in which she held herself.
So is that a yes for the teleport pad?
I swear Josh is messaging me more than a horny teenager in their first relationship, Dwayne grumbled.
I think so.
Al-Kaul smiled. A few others in the room hid their amusement, primarily Al-Kaul's brothers. They and their armies had seen or met the Stone Raiders and now had a rather interesting idea of who they were. In training, they were mad devils, but every other time they were goofing off or going off to the dungeons for fun.
Good.
Now I just have to deal with Kim complaining about walking all the way here. Dwayne shook his head and snorted as he pressed a command. His mouth moved, but Al-Kaul couldn't make out words nor read his lips properly. He'll be here within 20 or so minutes. Susie won't be here for another 2 days. Same for the trading branch coming from Verloon, Dwayne said. I hope you don't mind if I say I am looking forward to checking out your dungeons and caves instead of constant meetings, Dwayne grinned.
I know that the more risky of us think that way. Fortunately, we have much more level heads to keep us on course.
Al-Kaul smiled. Well, your councils are definitely less insane than my fellow guild leaders. The teleport pad disappeared from the storage room a few minutes ago. Now, all of the Stone Raiders who wanted to come stood in the teleport pad control room. Josh tossed a fruit through the portal. Dwayne kicked it. Mush came back through the portal as Dwayne's pants were covered in pink fruit.
Mmm, my favorite.
Josh wiped his face, now covered in pulped fruit. He grabbed a towel from his bag of holding, walking through the teleport pad's event horizon and into the center of Devil's Crater.
Dude, these are my comfy pants. This was my clean face, Josh said back.
He pulled the towel from his face and noticed the demons, beastkin, and the council members who led Devil's Crater, standing off to the side.
Pillock,
Josh said to Dwayne, smiling to the Devil's Crater leadership.
Hi, good to meet you. I'm Josh Giles. I heard you've got a mission for us.
Hello, Josh. It is good to finally put a face to the name. A large demon walked out from the middle of the leadership group. Alkau Travazar, level 243, aerial demon.
Agreed, Josh said. The two of them shook hands. Stone Raiders were pouring out of the portal and headed off to meet with their friends who stood to the side of the teleport pad.
So, shall we go and look over these plans of yours and check out just what kind of hell we're going to rain down on this demon horde?
Josh grinned. Straight to the point. Very well. Come with me.
Alkau flapped his wings. His guards and brothers took to the skies. Josh and a group of Stone Raiders' leadership ran as fast as they flew, heading for Alkau's keep, built into the cliffs around Devil's Crater.
Chapter 28. Homeward.
Malsor was off in the libraries of Perouche. He'd flashed a medallion that allowed him access to any college resources. Dave was a bit jealous, but he was also excited to go and see Cliff Hill. Susie had been running the business side of things, and keeping track of the minutiae of the businesses that Dave owned. Dave was excited to see the businesses, but he was more interested in seeing the people and getting to know what they needed. All of them were interested to see how Cliff Hill had changed.
So, where are you off to?
The man who was selling tickets to different places asked.
I have special coordinates, though I would prefer if I was the one to put them in.
Dave passed over enough gold to make the ticket seller's eyes go wide.
While it is not regular, with two teachers of the college backing your word, I think we can do that,
the ticket seller said. The gold disappeared as four tickets replaced them.
Thanks.
Dave smiled and pocketed the tickets.
Well, when you're done with the business your guild is up to, it would be nice to see you again.
Fire, back in her disguise as librarian Fuego, said to Dia. Dave could sense the woman's nervousness. Even the gods of this world got lonely, and it seemed that they missed and cared about their kids deeply. Well, at least Fire. Dave wasn't sure that Light or Dark would give much of a hell about any children they brought into the world. Bob did not paint a flattering picture when talking about them.
I like that,
Dia smiled. Fuego's face flared into a wide smile, growing more as Dia gave her a hug.
Look after this lot. Seems like they're a good bunch.
Dave's all right,
Osun Mal said.
Thanks, father-in-law.
Dave smiled back at the man. Osun Mal was fiercely protective of his daughter. But Dave and Maul had made a friendship, understanding that the other would do anything to protect Dia. Also, drinking together and talking freely didn't hurt.
Next transport,
the controller of the teleport pad called. Dave waved to Fuego and Osun Mal and moved to the controller's booth.
Okay, this is all rather complicated,
the controller started.
I've done this a few times. Your gain is too high, dude. Wasting power on that.
Dave pressed different keys on the control booth's control pad and turned a few dials. The teleport pad in front of the control room shifted and changed, rotating in new runes and out old ones until they formed a new pattern. Dave pressed the power button as the runes started to glow with power, a portal connecting the teleport pad to its location.
Damn, you trying to steal my job?
The controller laughed dryly.
Nah, thanks. I've got enough work as it is.
Dave smiled and shook the man's hand in thanks. He walked back out of the control pad. He saw through the teleport pad and out into a large stone courtyard. Cole and Weasel, as well as some dwarven shield-bearers, were waiting on the other side. Dave waved at them as Dia released Fuego and Osun Mal from a hug. Induka and Susie walked through the teleport pad's portal. Dave held out his hand. Dia grabbed it as they walked through the portal, They stepped out into one of the training squares that Dave remembered the tournament from a year ago being held on. The portal closed behind them as Dave looked at the teleport pad that was stuck into the ground. There was cracked stone around it, but that could be fixed easily enough.
"Damn, it's good to be home!"
Dave saw Lox and Gurren with wide grins on their faces as he crossed to the waiting crowd. Cole and Wiesel descended on him.
"Dinner later?"
Dia asked, knowing Dave was going to be wrapped up in business all too soon.
"Sounds good to me."
Dave smiled. He waved to his dwarven friends who had trained him and helped him come to know Amarillia and be able to defend himself. Dave turned to face his two managers.
"All right, let's get this business crap sorted out quick. Then we can get down to relaxing."
Dave smiled.
"Good to see you again."
Zell smiled and shook Dave's hand.
"Look to be going soft, I see. Not enough time in the forge," Cole said.
"I've been preoccupied with other things, mentor,"
Dave said, his voice dry. Cole made a displeased snort to hide his smile.
"I guess I'll tag along and see what you three have been up to," Susie said.
"Lead on, Zell,"
Dave said. They passed through the crowd, Dave saying hello, giving a hug or handshake here and there. His worries seemed to fall away. He promised to see them later, as they left the training square and headed up Cliff Hill. Dave paused, looking at it all. Cliff Hill looked like the namesake. It was as if a hill had once rested there and someone had cut away the slopes of two-thirds of the hill, turning the sides into sheer cliffs, leaving just the southwestern side with a sloping hill. What had been a wooden wall covering that gentle slope was now completely stone, wrapping around the base of the cliff. A trench ran in front of it, with a bridge toward Omal and another toward the Mythzia Mountains and Kufotel Forest. The road looped up and through the village at the top of Cliff Hill. It seemed to have multiplied in size since Dave had last seen it. There must have been 10 or 20 stone buildings where there had only been a handful when Dave left. Below the town, there was the biggest building, a 4-story apartment building with a small fortified wall around it. It had been the Golden Saber's base when they had come to Cliff Hill. Since then, the Stone Raiders had bought it from them, and it was the home to around 50 Stone Raiders who trained with the Dwarven forces, worked in the smithy, or traded with the people in Cliff Hill. There was a massive open area around it, plenty of room for expansion as trees filled the area. Well below that, through the trees, were two growing complexes, laid out in straight lines. There were smithies close to the road that led to Omal. Factories were next to the road that led to Mythzia. The ceramics factories were 500 meters long and 2 stories tall. Rough clay headed into one side, and then ceramics came out the other side, piled onto carts and sent across the stone-paved roads between the factories and smithies to the roads leading to Mythzia and Omal. Dave noticed another main road between the two factories now extended out into the forest, headed right for the training square where the teleport pad was located. Dave knew that his smithies and factories had grown, but he hadn't expected them to have grown so much. He felt a bit of nostalgia as he saw his portable smithy away a bit from the main smithies. The roads through the city were complete, a work of dwarven construction. Dave looked to where his house was. It was a simple cabin, tucked away from the road to Omal, overlooking the western side of Cliff Hill. It overlooked the fields that grew around the cliff faces of Cliff Hill, and the river which had been diverted to weave around the hill to water their crops. There was more room for the town to expand, but its progress left Dave stunned for a few moments.
"You've certainly been busy," Dave said, proud of all his people had been able to accomplish.
"We've got plenty more plans now with the teleport pad here. Our biggest thing is resources right now. With the new teleport pad opened, we can ship across Amarillia at much cheaper prices. Also, we can get some more workers in here.
We've got plenty of room to expand,"
Zell smiled.
"After purchasing the teleport pad, we're going to have to wait a bit before we do too much expanding or hiring. We haven't got too much in the way of coin to make much, with that weapons and shield order that you placed. For now, we're just losing money all over the place with the time and resources we're putting into it.
Cole said. Why don't we go to the bank first? It's been a while since I was at one. Dave hid his smile. Is Yukon still running the place?
Yeah, and doing a damned fine job of it,
Wiesel said. It'll be good to see him. So now, tell me, how are the new ruined furnaces going for you both? Dave asked as they got onto a wagon. The teleport pad was located lower down the hill, where the old Dwarven War Clan training area had been. A good 30 or 40 minute walk from the smithies and factories. As soon as they were sitting, it moved forward up Cliff Hill. Cole told the driver where to go, as Wiesel talked to Dave.
They've been great. The materials cost is a bit much. And as you said, we've only made as many as we've absolutely needed. However, we're going to need more very soon. They're faster and cheaper than the regular wood-burning furnaces. People like not having smoke all over the place.
Keeping the people around us is half the business. Don't need them actively fighting us on everything, Dave said.
Also, I think I can get a few of those furnaces, especially the bigger ones you were talking about, done for you.
That would be great. As Cole said, we don't have much in the way of wiggle room for money right now.
I think we'll be able to sort that out soon enough.
Susie looked to Dave. You thinking of investing? Dave asked.
Yes, though I know I'm not going to get much of the place, but even a few percent is good enough. With the teleport pad, your factories, smithies, and all those workers, you've got a growing company. Might be an idea to start looking for investors to take off some of the financial burdens and planning.
Susie turned the statement into a question. Dave winced.
Right now, I think we're good. We've got the right people in the right places. Having too many people with different opinions who don't know what is going on inside the factories and smithies could really mess things up. They see numbers and figures, not people and circumstances.
True. It was an idea, though I think the only people with the kind of capital we are thinking would be lords and ladies, which usually doesn't make them that in touch with regular people's troubles.
So, what about the workshop? How are things going there? Dave asked.
Good. Better than I thought, Cole said.
We've got around 50 people learning. It's slow going as the teachers are learning from your methods as they're teaching it. Right now, they're like one big smithy working on 5 different weapons. If you could go and talk to them, it would help out. Some of the stuff they've come up with has been turned into patents, which we're getting 5% from. Not much, but these patents are for things that people use every day. So it's a near constant stream of income. It's certainly making others interested in learning. Zell said with some pride.
Damn, the place looks like it's changed. Though it's only talking with you two that I'm realizing just how much it's changed. Dave shook his head, once again looking out at Cliff Hill. They were almost at the city center.
It's been a crazy year.
Zell grinned and looked to Cole, who nodded in agreement.
Oh, Cole, I almost forgot. You know I said I had that healer friend? I was wondering if you were interested in her helping you out, Dave asked.
I've become used to not using my eyes at this point, lad. It's not worth getting my hopes up again.
Cole's gruff voice cracked slightly.
Well, even if it helps fix your messed up nose so I don't hear you snoring from half a mile away, I count that as a victory.
Dave grinned.
I can still kick your butt, you young whelp,
Cole grumbled. The corners of his mouth flicked upward in amusement.
I'll take that as a yes, and I think we're here, Dave said.
The wagon rolled to a stop outside a large stone building, people moving in and out at a rapid pace. Dave sent Jules a message before he jumped off the wagon. The others followed, Susie asking Zell about the day-to-day running of his ceramics factory. Dave walked into the bank. A line led up to tellers dealing in all manner of tradable goods and coins.
That way. Back right.
Cole pointed to a hallway. Dave followed his directions, walking down the hallway and coming to a reception desk.
Hello. I am here to see Yukon,
Dave said to the elven receptionist.
Who are you?
She asked.
Dave Groslock.
Dave smiled. Her smile faltered as she studied him.
Right, and I'm Osandia. You were the third person to say that this week.
I need a piece of identification, please, or else I will call the Dwarven Warband to collect you.
Am I enough proof? Cole stepped out from behind Dave.
Master Cole, so he's really the Dave?
The receptionist looked at Dave. As I know it. Dave smiled, a bit worried about the impersonators, but happy that the bank had made sure they were arrested, instead of allowing them access to his accounts.
Sorry, I thought you would be shorter, and have a larger beard and not as muscled.
She went bright red, as she realized what she'd said.
Sorry, I'll get Mr. Yukon.
She opened her interface, her elven features bright red.
If you don't mind, me and Zell will hang out here to discuss things, Susie said.
Sure, this is just boring bank stuff. Dave shrugged.
Here, tell me how much of a share that will get me.
Susie opened up her interface, holding a trade with Dave.
You sure? Isn't this nearly all of your savings?
Dave asked.
We'll either get it back through the holdings here, or we can make it up in our next raid.
I'm not too bothered. Susie shrugged.
Where's the penny-pinching Susie I knew?
She learned that money isn't really all that important, and she can always make more. Now go on. Don't keep Yukon waiting.
She waved Dave on as the door behind the receptionist opened. Yukon appeared, a large smile on his face.
Master Cole and Dave, I heard the good news from Benvari Mountain. Two Master Smiths calling Cliff Hill home. I don't think there is any other city outside of the Dwarven Mountains that can boast the same.
Yukon shook Cole's hand and then turned to Dave. Dave smiled and grabbed the dwarf's hand. There was something that always made Dave smile when he was around the man. A kind of friendly energy.
Ah, it was pretty fun.
Dave shrugged.
Makes it to the Master Dwarven Smith level and calls it pretty fun.
Yukon laughed. A deep, bassy sound.
Come in, come in.
He waved them through the door.
When Cole came to me with your plans to purchase a teleport pad for the town, I was a little shocked. The second teleport pad in all of Ophir, right in Cliff Hill. I knew I settled in the right place when I heard that you were taking all of our resources and putting it into the pad. I've never heard anything quite like it. Most just want to hoard it all away.
They entered Yukon's office.
Please, have a seat.
He waved to the chairs in front of his desk and closed the door behind them before he took his own seat.
So, what can I do for you today?
Well, first I wanted to link together some patents that I've made. The accounts have been made and the patents filed, but I wasn't near a bank to connect them. Then I've got a deposit to make into the company's accounts, and then my good friend Susie also wants a part of the company, and she is willing to buy into it, so going to have to find out how much her money equals out of the company shares. We can do that first before everything else, Dave said.
Well, seems like you've got a long list of to-dos, Yukon said. You sure you want to do the share before accumulating all the assets you're putting in? You'll own more of the company.
She's like a sister to me, and I wouldn't trust anyone more, other than Zell and Cole, of course,
Dave smiled.
Well then, let's get that sorted out for you.
A prompt appeared in front of Dave, asking for the amount Susie was depositing against the worth of the company. Dave put in Susie's money, earning a surprised look from Yukon. The deposit screen disappeared. A new one asked for Dave's deposit. He put his in as Yukon shook his head.
I should remember that you're a player. But still, having this much money in your pocket instead of a bank, you must have been in the back end of nowhere.
Something like that, Dave said with a cryptic smile.
Fine, I won't ask more. Now, on to the patents and everything else.
Dia watched as Dave and Cole walked into the new tavern that had popped up in Cliff Hill.
Finally able to break away from work?
Lox asked, the members of Party Zero looking up from their mugs and food.
Just about, Dave said, as he and Cole approached the table.
Dia passed him a tankard, while Cole smacked Gurren's shoulder and sat down next to him.
What would I do without you, my dear?
Dave kissed Dia, his scruff tickling her cheeks.
Not a whole heck of a lot.
She smiled.
looking back in his eyes as they danced in the restaurant's firelight. He pulled her in for another kiss.
Oh, come on. Can't have you two stuck by the lips all night. You've got your own house for that, Locke said.
Cole laughed as he grabbed a beer. Gurren grinned. Susie and Induka kissed one another as well.
Ugh, damn well surrounded by couples.
Locke shook his head, as if it were a funeral to their single lives.
Don't worry, we're not stuck by the lips.
Most of the time, Dave laughed. I heard you two were out with some of the Stone Raiders who did some dungeon prospecting and such.
Yeah, found some right doozies. Had some close calls, but I'll tell you, you players, you can damn well level up quick.
Gurren looked to Lox, who nodded in agreement. Dave looked to them. Damn, you both gained nearly 100 levels. Gurren was at 121. Lox was at 125.
Whereas you've gained 12, Gurren said.
I think what Gurren is trying to ask is, when are you going to start using those damn stat points?
Locke said.
I'm starting to use them now.
I kind of figured out what I want to do, though I want to do it slow, or else I'll start slamming into walls or have to figure out how to walk again.
Ugh, jumping like 30 stat points is one hell of an experience.
Dave shook his head.
That was your own fault,
Dia poked him. Still not happy, he'd knocked himself out from absorbing the information about the teleport paths. Dave looked away, drinking from his tankard. Gurren and Lox laughed at the two's antics.
So, how long until we head out to wherever the rest of the guild is?
Lox asked. 2 days. We've got some guild business to attend to tomorrow night as well. Dave looked to Lox and Gurren, who had both joined the Stone Raiders. The patch proudly displayed on their shoulders.
Just say the word and we'll do what we can to help,
Gurren said. Lox nodded.
Ah, shucks, you're gonna make me blush, Dave said.
They fell into laughter and moved to less serious topics. Dia watched them with a fond smile as they shared stories from their latest adventures and ate a meal together.
See you in the morning,
Dave waved to Induka and Susie, who headed to their room above the tavern. Dave wrapped his arm around Dia, walking down the street, headed for their own home.
I've missed Cliff Hill. It isn't any Koof Hotel, but it is home.
Dia squeezed his hand.
That it is, Dave said.
Even now, there was wagon traffic going through the town and between Omal and Mithzia. Dave and Dia jumped on the back of the wagon, looking at the growing town center. Dave put his arm around Dia.
So much has happened in the time that we've been gone for, and we still have so much more to do.
Our adventure has just started, Dia agreed. It didn't take them long to reach their home, and they jumped off. They walked through the familiar trees, passing the campfire area, where they had stayed while Dave was making his house. The smithy and the ceramics factories had been removed, leaving a large open area out front and to the sides of the house. Dave opened the door for Dia. She walked in and checked out the closets for sheets and warm furs. The night was getting chilly quickly. Dave moved to the fireplace. Logs were set in the fireplace, and a chill came down the chimney. He formed a small stream of fire, soaking the wood. It slowly came to life, lighting the room up some.
Guess my night vision's improved some. Don't even need the torches anymore.
Dave turned around, his lips finding hers. She grabbed the discarded furs from the floor, pulling them onto herself and over Dave. She kissed him.
I love you, she said,
stretching out over top of him.
I love you too, you enchanting elven seductress.
Dave's hands cupped her butt. She smiled, moving and getting comfortable on top of him. Dave couldn't help but smile at the cuteness of it all. He kissed the top of her head, hitting her ass lightly and wrapping his arms around her. They fell asleep like that, the flames of the fire flickering gently in the fireplace. Chapter 29 A Glance into the Future
He's here!
Pete, Geswald's secretary, burst into his master's office.
"Who's here?"
Geswald demanded. Pete better have a good reason for barging into his office.
"Josh Giles, leader of the Stone Raiders. He and 10 other Stone Raiders arrived from some unknown location. They arrived in Amaran just a few minutes ago. They're already leaving the city and heading for Verloon."
"How long until they reach it?"
Geswald asked.
"A few hours? They're running, but it is hard to describe just how fast they can run."
Pete shook his head, as if he was still in disbelief.
"It takes 2 days to get to Verloon by wagon,"
Geswald said, stunned by the revelation. Pete's expression made it clear that he wasn't going back on what he had said.
"What are they up to? They bought up that large farm on the outskirts of town, and they seem to be building a new headquarters there. It's driving people away from them, as it's even farther from Amaran now. Maybe there is an issue with the traders in his guild? It would make sense, with him coming here, to tell them face to face what he thinks, and see how badly they've messed up."
Geswald rubbed his hands together, thinking of the Stone Raiders splitting off with the Exnar's traders they'd made a sub-guild out of. "If they fall apart, then it will be much easier to take down the Exnar's traders."
"I want our people in Verloon to know what happened between Florence and Josh. We need to know if there are issues between the newly merged guilds. If so, then we can use it to our advantage."
"I will send word."
Pete bowed and left his master's office. Geswald rubbed his hands together. The Stone Raiders were the problem. Breaking them off from the Exdars would make the Player Guild open to be attacked, and pressured if they wanted to keep trading in the area. No longer having protection from a guild famed in combat was a good way to get one's stores destroyed. Josh and the Stone Raiders stopped, sensing the auras of the party in the middle of the road. They didn't have their weapons out. They just stood there.
"Can I help you with something?" Josh asked.
"Do you know how long it's taken waiting here to see if you lot would show up?"
A man walked out in front of the others. Josh shrugged.
"Well, my name is Jeremy. On behalf of the Fellox Guild, we issue you, the Stone Raiders, a challenge to prove which is the best guild at raiding. We will record a massive raid that we do, and you record a raid that you do. Then we post it on the forums, and the other players of Emerillia decide which of the two clans is the better raiding guild."
Jeremy crossed his arms. Josh felt his competitive side come out as he walked up to Jeremy.
"Is there a time limit?"
1 month real time,"
Jeremy said. "So 3 months in game. I think we can do that. What do you want to bet on it?"
"Bet?"
Jeremy looked confused.
"Well, look, if we win, we're still number one. But if everyone starts trying to challenge us without some kind of bet, then it's just going to get annoying. So let's say 100,000 gold. You win, you get 100,000 gold, and the title of best raiding clan. If we win, we get 100,000 gold and keep our title."
"I'll ask my clan leader."
Jeremy opened up his interface, using voice chat for a few minutes.
"Very well, we agree,"
Jeremy said. A challenge issued. The Stone Raiders and Fellox guilds challenge one another to complete a raid in 3 months' game time. Both sides will record their activities. The one with the most votes from the Emerillia community will be named Emerillia's best player raiding guild. Failure. Don't complete raid. Don't upload video in 3 months' Emerillia time. Reward. Title of best player raiding guild. 100,000 gold. Josh shook Jeremy's hand.
"Now, if you excuse me, we're headed off to Amaran to go meet up with the rest of our clan."
A wagon rolled out of the woods as the Fellox Raiders jumped on, eyeing their competition.
"Good luck,"
Jeremy waved, moving to the wagon.
"You too."
Josh waved back before turning to his Stone Raiders. They started running again, Verloon visible in the distance.
Florence logged into Amarillia, her home turning into the fields around Verloon, and the walls that were forming the new headquarters. Her eyes widened at the walls. They looked to be made of one piece, and as smooth as a kitchen countertop, not the rough rocks that it had been just a few hours ago. There were earth and dark mages walking around, holding up the blueprints, forming the ground according to what they saw. Basements seemed to form out of the ground, as rock and metal grew into the rough forms, creating walls and rooms. Crafters were sizing windows, or fitting in amenities and rune carvings where they needed to. Florence saw a familiar face in the middle of it all, talking to her people. "I should have realized that you were in the middle of all this." Florence walked closer to him.
"Ah, Florence, they said that you were AFK for a bit. I didn't think that you would mind if we sped up the project a little bit. As much as I like running, it isn't all that fun."
Josh smiled. "So, what is going on here?" Florence waved to the growing headquarters.
"Well, we're building the main building for the guild. We've got a storefront going in, as detailed in the plans, on the lower levels. Offices and room for the guild on the upper floor. Tavern to the side right there, then stables beside that. On the left side, we're going to be putting in the teleport pad, as you've indicated on the plans. Going to include barracks and defenses around it. Can't be too safe with those things. We're going to be starting a road from here toward Verloon Actual. We won't complete it. We've got a day here before I need to head over to Markholm where the Golden Sabres are staying. We might be absorbing some of their members into the guild if all goes according to plan."
Josh smiled.
"Well, you've been busy."
Florence looked over the growing compound. It was literally growing from the ground in front of her. The traders were helping out where they could. The builders Florence had hired were clearing the area and putting the materials where the different buildings were supposed to be, and talking to the mages about structural integrity and such. Trees sprouted around the two earth mages. The branches of the trees wove together as they grew, forming into a roof and stalls.
"Wow."
Florence watched as the stables formed out of a dozen trees, a living building like some of the elven cities she'd seen on the forums.
"Magic. It's pretty damn crazy,"
Josh said.
"Uh-huh."
Florence shook her head.
"Have you got the people needed for Cliff Hill and the other location ready?"
Josh asked, not risking speaking of Devil's Crater out loud. There was no telling whether someone had a listening spell on them.
"Yeah, they're all ready and good to go. Got some people also interested in being farmers, checking out the crafting side of things and such. They're hesitant to do it, as they're part of the guild, and scared they'll be kicked. Though I think with time they'll come to understand the guild is more like a country. You are part of it no matter what, and you can do as you want, but it reflects back on us. As long as they're happy and answer the guild's call when we need it, then they can do whatever they like. I know some people are interested to talk to you E-heads and make this their full-time life. Living 3 times longer than the rest of humanity, and being part of a magical world like Amarillia, has its draws,"
Florence said.
"Are you thinking of making the transition?"
Josh asked.
"Not yet. There are things that I have to deal with back on Earth. But maybe in a few weeks I could."
Florence's mind moved to her brother, who was on life support. She'd come to understand that soon enough he would pass away. There was no one left back on Earth, and Amarillia had paid for his bills as she had forged out a life for herself on Amarillia. Maybe becoming an E-head would be a good way to just get away from it all. A fresh start in a new place that I enjoy, and have a bunch of good friends around me. She knew that she couldn't leave her clan now. They had only just started. The possibilities of what they could do were intoxicating. "With all of this done, we could have the teleport pad in place within the day," she said, looking at all of the work.
"Good. Then we can start cycling players in and out. Have you talked to the bank about a place here?"
Josh asked.
"I have, but they haven't got back to me. Seems that they think we're still too small for their business.
Was thinking that we make up our own bank if they keep being assholes about it,"
Florence growled. Josh let out a barking laugh.
"What?
Seems you really are becoming a stone raider. If someone doesn't give you a solution,
then you're going to get out there and make one. I don't know about a bank, but it's hard to scam people in this game. I'll leave that up to you. Josh smiled. Once we get the teleport pad up and running, then you can check out the guild hall and meet up with Lucy. She's still organizing everything. Once it's all set up, then we can start shipping supplies through here and other locations. How many other branches do we have up and running?
One in Ophir, which'll be two as soon as Cliff Hill is connected. One in Markholm. Three in Heval, then here in Verloon. We don't have any in Ashal right now. None of us are high enough levels for it to be safe for us there.
Gaining levels by just being a traitor was not the easiest thing to do. Well, all the more reason for people to follow what they want to do. Bring those levels up through some fun. Once Cliff Hill is connected, then we're going to have people from Cliff Hill come here to train people here. And then a training camp in Cliff Hill for forest-oriented lessons. Then another camp in the other location to teach about open-area warfare tactics. It won't be fun, but it means that everyone in the clan will know how to fight and work together no matter what.
Josh looked to Florence. But we're traders. We don't need to know how to fight.
You're the Exdar's traders of the Stone Raiders Guild. We have a big target on our back simply because of who we are, which also means that you do as well. Better to have it, and the levels that come with it, and not need them, than being attacked and you could have been capable of defending yourself.
Josh looked to Florence, his gaze hard and steady. He was doing it out of care for them, not out of a want to just show them how they weren't warriors. They'd faced many kinds of enemies since they'd come to Amarillia. He wanted them to be ready to deal with anything and everything.
Okay, you make a good point. I know a few people won't be too happy with it, though they'll get over it.
Good. In the meantime, I have this. Josh pulled out a box from his bag of holding. Florence looked at it. Stone Raiders Treasury.
Josh, what is this?
It is what it says it is. Links right to the one in the guild hall. Instead of having to send it all back and forth, this will allow us to be linked together, connected at all times.
Thank you.
Florence tucked it away in a pouch on her hip, a small bag of holding.
We've got far to go, but this is a good start.
Josh looked over the four large buildings that were forming.
That it is.
Florence looked to the main building. On the face of the building, the Stone Raiders emblem was engraved above the wide open doors that led into the storefront. Ella Dorne checked her sword once again. Ella Gall shook his head. It was the fifth time she checked it. Around them, five fighter and three archer automatons looked for any threats to their charges.
Are you sure about this?
Hamdir asked again.
I am, Hamdir. You were the one who said that we need to get out there and start making friends and not keep on hiding down here. This is a step forward in that direction. Also, if we do get a portal, then it would be one hell of a find. Think of all we could learn.
Ella Dorne's eyes lit up as she thought of the possibilities.
There were a number of safeguards and other items on the portals that the Aleph had never been able to backward engineer. With an inactive portal, then those safeguards shouldn't be in place, allowing us to study them more than ever before.
Ella Dorne reminded him.
I know, but the risk is still rather high,
Hamdir said.
Risk big to win big,
Aligal said.
Fine. I know when I'm beat.
Hamdir held up his hands in defeat.
Look after yourselves and let me know if anything goes wrong.
We will, Mother Hen,
Ella Dorne teased. Hamdir shook his head, looking to the Aleph standing in the controller room, behind the teleport pad. They nodded. The teleport pad flared to life, and a portal opened to Cliff Hill. Ella Dorne took a deep breath and looked to Gall.
Well, let's go and see Amarillia.
Sounds like an adventure.
Gall grabbed her hand and started forward, forcing them both into motion. Ella Dorne felt the sun on her as she looked out over a large flat area made from stones. A bunch of armed and armored dwarves looked at them from behind their shields.
Their eyes thinned at the sight of the automatons. Dave and Dia walked through the dwarves, hand in hand.
Welcome to our home.